Chapter 57. Whistling the light guitar in the next room to mine at 5 o'clock this morning. Apostrophe, he's very fond of whistling, apostrophe said Tibbs, with a slight smirk. Yes I ain't, apostrophe was the laconic reply. Mr. John Evenson was in the receipt of an independent income, arising chiefly from various houses he owned in the different suburbs. He was very morose and discontented. He was a thorough radical, and used to attend a great variety of public meetings, for the express purpose of finding fault with everything that was proposed. Mr. Westottle, on the other hand, was a high Tory. He was a clerk in the Woods and Forests office, which he considered rather an aristocratic employment. He knew the peerage by heart, and could tell you, offhand, where an illustrious personage lived. He had a good set of teeth, and a capital tailor. Mr. Evenson looked on all these qualifications with profound contempt, and the consequence was that the two were always disputing, much to the edification of the rest of the house. It should be added that, in addition to his partiality for whistling, Mr. Westottle had a great idea of his singing powers. There were two other boarders, besides the gentlemen in the back drawing room, Mr. Alfred Tompkins and Mr. Frederick O'Bleary. Mr. Tompkins was a clerk in a wine house. He was a connoisseur in paintings, and had a wonderful eye for the picturesque. Mr. O'Bleary was an Irishman, recently imported. He was in a perfectly wild state, and had come over to England to be an apothecary, a clerk in a government office, an actor, a reporter, or anything else that turned up he was not particular. He was on familiar terms with two small Irish members, and got franks for everybody in the house. He felt convinced that his intrinsic merits must procure him a high destiny. He wore shepherd's plaid in expressibles, and used to look under all the ladies' bonnets as he walked along the streets. His manners and appearance reminded one of Orson. Here comes Mr. Westottle, apostrophe said Tibbs, and Mr. Westottle forthwith appeared in blue slippers, and a shawl dressing gown, whistling Die Piercer. Apostrophe, good morning, sir, apostrophe said Tibbs again. It was almost the only thing he ever said to anybody. How are you, Tibbs? Apostrophe, apostrophe condescendingly replied the amateur, and he walked to the window, and whistled louder than ever. Pretty air, that. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Evenson, with a snarl, and without taking his eyes off the paper. Glad you like it, apostrophe replied Westottle, highly gratified. Don't you think it would sound better if you whistled it a little louder? Apostrophe, apostrophe inquired the mastiff. No, I don't think it would, apostrophe rejoined the unconscious Westottle. I'll tell you what, Westottle, apostrophe said Evenson, who had been bottling up his anger for some hours. The next time you feel disposed to whistle the light guitar at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'll trouble you to whistle it with your head out o window. If you don't, I'll learn the triangle I will, by apostrophe, the entrance of Mrs. Tibbs with the keys, in a little basket, interrupted the threat, and prevented its conclusion. Mrs. Tibbs apologized for being down rather late. The bell was rung. James brought up the urn, and received an unlimited order for dry toast and bacon. Tibbs sat down at the bottom of the table, and began eating watercresses like a Nebuchadnezzar. Mr. O'Bleary appeared, and Mr. Alfred Tompkins. The compliments of the morning were exchanged, and the tea was made. God bless me! Apostrophe, apostrophe exclaimed Tompkins, who had been looking out at the window. Here Westottle, pray come here, make haste. Apostrophe, Mr. Westottle started from the table, and everyone looked up. Do you see, apostrophe said the connoisseur, placing Westottle in the right position a little more this way. There, do you see how splendidly the light falls upon the left side of that broken chimney pot at number 48? Apostrophe, dear me. I see, apostrophe replied Westottle, in a tone of admiration. I never saw an object stand out so beautifully against the clear sky in my life, apostrophe ejaculated Alfred. Everybody except John Evenson echoed the sentiment, for Mr. Tompkins had a great character for finding out beauties which no one else could discover. He certainly deserved it. I have frequently observed a chimney pot in College Green, Dublin, which has a much better effect, apostrophe said the patriotic O'Bleary, who never allowed Ireland to be outdone on any point. The assertion was received with obvious incredulity, for Mr. Tompkins declared that no other chimney pot in the United Kingdom, broken or unbroken, could be so beautiful as the one at number 48. The room door was suddenly thrown open, and Agnes appeared, leading in Mrs. Bloss, who was dressed in a geranium-colored muslin gown, and displayed a gold watch of huge dimensions, a chain to match, and a splendid assortment of rings, with enormous stones. A general rush was made for a chair, and a regular introduction took place. Mr. John Evenson made a slight inclination of the head. Mr. Frederick O'Bleary, Mr. Alfred Tompkins, and Mr. Wispoddle bowed like the mandarins in a grocer's shop, tips rubbed hands, and went round in circles. He was observed to close one eye, and to assume a clockwork sort of expression with the other. This has been considered as a wink, and it has been reported that Agnes was its object. We repel the calumny, and challenge contradiction. Mrs. Tibbs inquired after Mrs. Bloss's health in a low tone. Mrs. Bloss, with a supreme contempt for the memory of Lindley Murray, answered the various questions in a most satisfactory manner, and a pause ensued, during which the eatables disappeared with awful rapidity. You must have been very much pleased with the appearance of the ladies going to the drawing room the other day, Mr. O'Bleary? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Tibbs, hoping to start a topic. Yes, apostrophe, replied Orson, with a mouthful of toast. Never saw anything like it before, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, suggested Wispoddle. No, except the Lord Lieutenant's levies, apostrophe, replied O'Bleary. Are they at all equal to our drawing rooms? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, infinitely superior. Apostrophe, apostrophe, gad. I don't know, apostrophe, said the aristocratic Wispoddle. The Dowager Marchioness of Publicash was most magnificently dressed, and so was the Baron Slappenbach in Hawson. Apostrophe, what was he presented on? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Evenson. On his arrival in England. Apostrophe, I thought so, apostrophe, growled the radical. You never hear of these fellows being presented on their going away again. They know better than that. Apostrophe, unless somebody pervades them with an appointment, apostrophe, said Mrs. Bloss, joining in the conversation in a faint voice. Well, apostrophe, said Wispoddle, evading the point, it's a splendid sight. Apostrophe, and did it never occur to you, apostrophe, inquired the radical, who never would be quiet. Did it never occur to you, that you pay for these precious ornaments of society? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it certainly has occurred to me, apostrophe, said Wispoddle, who thought this answer was a poser. It has occurred to me, and I am willing to pay for them. Apostrophe, well, and it has occurred to me too, apostrophe, replied John Evenson, and I ain't willing to pay for them. Then why should I? I say, why should I? Apostrophe, apostrophe, continued the politician, laying down the paper, and knocking his knuckles on the table. There are two great principles demand apostrophe, a cup of tea if you please, dear, apostrophe, interrupted Tibbs. And supply apostrophe, may I trouble you to hand this tea to Mr. Tibbs? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Tibbs, interrupting the argument, and unconsciously illustrating it. The thread of the orator's discourse was broken. He drank his tea, and resumed the paper. If it's very fine, apostrophe, said Mr. Alfred Tompkins, addressing the company in general, I shall ride down to Richmond today, and come back by the steamer. There are some splendid effects of light and shade on the Thames. The contrast between the blueness of the sky, and the yellow water is frequently exceedingly beautiful. Apostrophe, Mr. Wispoddle hummed, flow on, thou shining river. Apostrophe, we have some splendid steam vessels in Ireland, apostrophe said O'Bleary.
Certainly, apostrophe said Mrs. Bloss, delighted to find a subject broached in which she could take part.
The accommodations are extraordinary, apostrophe said O'Bleary.
Extraordinary indeed, apostrophe returned Mrs. Bloss.
When Mr. Bloss was alive, he was promiscuously obligated to go to Ireland on business.
I went with him, and Raleigh, the manner in which the ladies and gentlemen were accommodated with berths, is not creditable.
Apostrophe, Tips, who had been listening to the dialogue, looked aghast, and evinced a strong inclination to ask a question, but was checked by a look from his wife.
Mr. Wispadel laughed, and said Tomkins had made a pun, and Tomkins laughed too, and said he had not.
The remainder of the meal passed off as breakfasts usually do. Conversation flagged, and people played with their teaspoons.
The gentlemen looked out at the window, walked about the room, and, when they got near the door, dropped off one by one.
Tips retired to the back parlor by his wife's orders, to check the greengrocer's weekly account, and ultimately Mrs. Tips and Mrs. Bloss were left alone together.
Oh dear!
Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the latter, I feel alarmingly faint, it's very singular.
Apostrophe, it certainly was, for she had eaten 4 pounds of solids that morning.
By the by, apostrophe, said Mrs. Bloss, I have not seen Mr. What's-his-name yet.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Gobler?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, suggested Mrs. Tibbs.
Yes.
Apostrophe, oh.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Tibbs, he is a most mysterious person. He has his meals regularly sent upstairs, and sometimes don't leave his room for weeks together.
Apostrophe, I haven't seen or heard nothing of him, apostrophe, repeated Mrs. Bloss.
I dare say you'll hear him tonight, apostrophe, replied Mrs. Tibbs. He generally groans a good deal on Sunday evenings.
Apostrophe, I never felt such an interest in anyone in my life, apostrophe, ejaculated Mrs. Bloss.
A little double knock interrupted the conversation. Dr. Waskey was announced, and duly shown in. He was a little man with a red face dressed of course in black, with a stiff white neckerchief. He had a very good practice, and plenty of money, which he had amassed by invariably humoring the worst fancies of all the females of all the families he had ever been introduced into.
Mrs. Tibbs offered to retire, but was entreated to stay.
Well, my dear ma'am, and how are we?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Waskey, in a soothing tone.
Very ill, doctor, very ill, apostrophe, said Mrs. Bloss, in a whisper.
Ah, we must take care of ourselves.
We must, indeed, apostrophe, said the obsequious Waskey, as he felt the pulse of his interesting patient.
How is our appetite?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Bloss shook her head.
Our friend requires great care, apostrophe, said Waskey, appealing to Mrs. Tibbs, who of course assented.
I hope, however, with the blessing of Providence, that we shall be enabled to make her quite stout again.
Apostrophe, Mrs. Tibbs wondered in her own mind what the patient would be when she was made quite stout.
We must take stimulants, apostrophe, said the cunning Waskey, plenty of nourishment, and, above all, we must keep our nerves quiet. We positively must not give way to our sensibilities.
We must take all we can get, apostrophe, concluded the doctor, as he pocketed his fee, and we must keep quiet.
Apostrophe, dear man.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Bloss, as the doctor stepped into the carriage.
Charming creature indeed, quite a ladies man.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Tibbs, and Dr. Waskey rattled away, to make fresh gulls of delicate females, and pocket fresh fees.
As we had occasion, in a former paper, to describe a dinner at Mrs. Tibbs, and as one meal went off very like another on all ordinary occasions, we will not fatigue our readers by entering into any other detailed account of the domestic economy of the establishment. We will therefore proceed to events, merely premising that the mysterious tenant of the back drawing room was a lazy, selfish hypochondriac,
always complaining and never ill. As his character in many respects closely assimilated to that of Mrs. Bloss, a very warm friendship soon sprung up between them. He was tall, thin, and pale. He always fancied he had a severe pain somewhere or other, and his face invariably wore a pinched, screwed-up expression. He looked, indeed, like a man who had got his feet in a tub of exceedingly hot water, against his will. For 2 or 3 months after Mrs. Bloss's first appearance in Coram Street, John Evenson was observed to become, every day, more sarcastic and more ill-natured, and there was a degree of additional importance in his manner, which clearly showed that he fancied he had discovered something, which he only wanted a proper opportunity of divulging. He found it at last. One evening, the different inmates of the house were assembled in the drawing room engaged in their ordinary occupations. Mr. Gobler and Mrs. Bloss were sitting at a small card table near the center window, playing cribbage. Mr. Westottle was describing semicircles on the music stool, turning over the leaves of a book on the piano, and humming most melodiously. Alfred Tompkins was sitting at the round table, with his elbows duly squared, making a pencil sketch of a head considerably larger than his own. O'Bleary was reading Horace, and trying to look as if he understood it. And John Evenson had drawn his chair close to Mrs. Tibbs' work table, and was talking to her very earnestly in a low tone. "I can assure you, Mrs. Tibbs," said the radical, laying his forefinger on the muslin she was at work on, "I can assure you, Mrs. Tibbs, that nothing but the interest I take in your welfare would induce me to make this communication. I repeat, I fear Westottle is endeavoring to gain the affections of that young Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.